Welcome to the pandemic pause version of NetFront Presence. I'm here with Jim Thomas, safely back from Canada, and Tom Timmerman in the STL. Well, let's start with you, JT. You got out of Canada and crossed the border and made it home for the holidays. And boy, the NHL season looking very uncertain. And of course, the Olympics very certainly out of the way. What a mess the NHL faces right now, JT.
Yeah, and boy, it happened pretty quickly. I would say maybe about three weeks, and woof, we're kind of back to last year in terms of the league. And you know, so they break early for Christmas. I don't know if that's really going to solve anything. Or when it comes down to it, it's just one extra day of a break because they're coming back a day early to practice. So it's a strange world we're living in, and especially if you're a hockey player, because I don't think anybody knows how this is going to end up in terms of the hockey season.
Yeah, I think the one cause for optimism is that so many players have had it. For instance, Calgary, you would think should be good for the rest of the season because the whole team's had it by now. And so that could be, that if it may have peaked to that extent. But yeah, you know, even a 1 day or 2 day pause is enough to make you think, yeah, you know, the last time we did this, it didn't work out so well. But that would be the hope, just that so many people have it, that there is a herd immunity or there's no one left to get it.
No, JT, eventually we're going to move to, what the NFL is pushing. And I think just what we're going to see in life in general, whether you're in a factory, a warehouse, a newspaper office, whatever, at some point we're going to get to reach the stage where sick players will sit and healthy players that who hopefully aren't tested every 10 seconds will play. But unfortunately, I mean, that makes sense at some point, especially as herd immunity and vaccinations and all that, hold against this variant. But the complicating factor for the NHL is that Canada just doesn't see it that way. I mean, the U.S. is probably going to take a more liberal view of allowing people to work and, testing and recovery time and so forth. But boy, Canada's not. So JT, what happens with the NHL? How do they solve this? They have a problem the NFL does not have.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't know if there's an easy answer there. It is tough to get into Canada. It's tough to get out of Canada. And, I had to get just for this Canadian trip, tested before you go in, when you leave. And I don't think there's an easy way out of it. And we got a lot of hockey left. I mean, if they were planning on playing 82 games, most teams have around 30 games in. So you got 50 games, you got playoffs. I think the NFL version is probably the way sports will go. Of course, it's basically the way the NBA started this season. And you're just going to have to, learn to live with COVID in our lives, kind of like, maybe like the flu, where some people are going to get it bad, but you take all the precautions you can. You take all the shots, or I guess now there's maybe a COVID pill that's coming out. You can, and you just try to live with it, because it doesn't seem like it's going to go away in our lifetimes.
Yeah, I was just looking at the schedule. I mean, the Blues have eight games still in Canada. They go to Vancouver and Calgary twice. Those are the Eastern Canada games they lost on this trip, plus a trip to Montreal. I guess they're done with Winnipeg. So if the Canadian border is closed, and if it reverts to some sort of, like last year where the Canadian teams are separate, that's going to be a factor. The Blues are going to have to pick up some games there. Or do they, create some sort of bubble where those teams, because they talked about it last time around, where, if the teams could come into Canada, but only, go specifically to games and not interact anywhere else. Can they create something like that? But that, if if Canada tightens up, that's going to really complicate matters.
Well, let's get to the hockey portion of this, because we really don't know how it's going to play. I mean, the league's coming back on Monday and they got cross-border games right away. And plus, there's going to be a bunch of guys testing positive coming out of the holidays. So the league's not going to be in a whole lot better shape on Monday than it was this last Monday. Gary Bettman's dreaming if he thinks otherwise. So setting that aside, JT, the Blues were starting to get much closer to full strength. You know, you're never going to be completely healthy in the NHL, but they were trending the right direction while some other teams were really starting to go the wrong way between the COVID and the injury recoveries. In practice, Blues are starting to look more like the original Blues this season.
Yeah, there are about four or five players that were on the injury list that are coming back, and that extra practice that they had when they were supposed to be in Ottawa, it kind of showed what Berube had in mind for the lines. Now they didn't do formal line rushes, but they ran some drills where they had lines out there, and he had Perron with O'Reilly and Saad. And it dropped Brown down to what I guess would be a third line with Logan Brown, Thomas, and Kyrou. Obviously, the Russian line stayed together. So kind of went back to how we felt earlier times in the season when they were healthier. When they have all the guys there, the lines look pretty good. And so I think some of those guys would have played. Berube said so. It would have played in the Canadian trip. We'd be about 3 hours away from 3.5 hours away as we taped this net front from the Toronto game. So yeah, they're getting healthier for now. It leads to the question of the age old question of what decisions do they make when everybody's back, but we haven't gotten to that point yet. I believe it was the day of the Detroit game. That's when Shen came back, and the Detroit game before Thanksgiving. And finally, the whole roster is intact. They step out for the morning skate. James Neal tweets something, and no, they don't have a full roster.
Yeah, we were so classically getting ahead of ourselves that we say what happens, but you got to think Logan Brown has made a case for staying around. He could be the one guy from this who sticks around, especially since would have to go through waivers going back down. So, if they have to create a spot for Logan Brown in a perfectly healthy world, what does that say? It's possible we never see a perfectly healthy world with this team this season, but Logan Brown has reached out here and is, good. I mean, obviously not a great player, but he's been pretty good and has helped them out. So I think that's something, as this team comes together, is where does Logan Brown fit in?
Yeah, JT, I mean, you look at that picture. I mean, in today's COVID world and injury world, Logan Brown does not get through waivers. I mean, teams are desperate for players. They're grabbing guys off the waiver wire, and that's going to continue. So nobody who can play is going to get through waivers, I don't think. And Brown, with his pedigree, the skill level, there's something there. I think he's starting to enter into the Zach Sanford territory, JT, where you're seeing it. He's got some size. He's got some skill. He may be a nice third line slot. But JT, the question now is opportunities here. Can he keep the skates moving and avoid the fate of Zach Sanford, who could never quite get to that next level?
Yeah. Yeah. And good hands like Zach Sanford. I've thought of that, that comparison. We haven't seen, and God bless you, Zach, we haven't seen any of the bonehead plays from Brown yet, but yeah, I think he could be in that territory. And the Zach Sanford that we saw before he left was a guy that, 10, 12, 15 goals a season, a handy guy to have. I think Brown might be a little bit more physical than Sanford, but yeah, he's proved to be a handy guy. That's for sure. I think there's 27 guys. I've counted a few times. There's 27 guys kind of on the varsity now, counting all the injured guys. So four guys have to go to get them down to 23. Now you have three goalies, obviously. So one goalie will go, and I guess we believe it's Lindgren. Maybe they string it out. Maybe they send Husso down for a conditioning assignment. I get the sense Husso's not quite ready. But then, you know, you have James Neal. You send Dakota Joshua down, who's played so well this time. Nathan Walker. That could get you to 23 right there. But, you know, it's a tough decisions for them. But I agree with you guys. I think Logan Brown has earned his way on the roster. And I didn't think this before, but I think it now. I think if he went through waivers, somebody would claim him.
Yeah, he got through before and during preseason when they sent him down. Yeah, and you look at that and you think James Neal is he the you know, who doesn't project into the long-term Blues plans. Does that make him the more expendable guy because you need to create a roster spot? Here's a guy that you don't think is going to be with the team past this season while the other guys might. So to that extent, you know, is he the guy that you would look to move just on a practical asset management thing? But we also don't know how long his injury is going to carry on. I mean, it looked like he was going to come back and then he's not. And right now, there's certainly no reason for the Blues to rush him back.
I'm starting to get some Scotty Upshaw flashbacks here. Just the type of player. Starting to get those flashbacks. Well, JT, one of the good problems that's been created for the Chief as he tries to sort through things is a frequent topic on the net front. Ivan Barbashev, you know, they're just playing so well, the Russian unit, and he is being so productive at a level that could not have been anticipated. Offensively, because it's just working so well. But well, because he's playing up consistently well and not just playing up here or there, man, that creates some interesting options. You know, we're looking at a lineup that, you know, hasn't had Braden Schenn, that's just trying to reassemble that third group with Thomas and Kyrou. It's a nice problem to have, all of this offense, potentially.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. And you got to think that sooner or later that O'Reilly line will get going, especially with Perron. Saad has been a player who he'll have four or five games where he's scoring like crazy and then four or five games where he goes dry. And it's been a pattern now with him, but he's still right up there with 11 goals. So you get Perron back with O'Reilly. That line has to get going. I think that because Barbashev's playing so well, I mean, you've had Thomas with Tarasenko and some form of left winger most of the season, but you gotta keep Barbashev with the other two Russians because they've been so good. So what do you do with Thomas when you go back when you come back? And we saw a peek of it in practice Monday with Kyrou. And Logan Brown, but that raises the question, like center wise. Okay, when you get Sundqvist back, when you get Schenn back, where do you put those two guys? Again, it's a problem that we don't have to worry about now. Schenn is not practicing at all. Sundqvist benefits from this little break because I think the 10th day would be New Jersey for him, and so he would be eligible to come off the COVID list pretty quick. But I don't think you move Barbashev away from the Russians right now.
Yeah, certainly the best thing we've seen of Ivan Barbashev over his career. I mean, it just, you know, that line has energized him. He was already an energy guy, but that line has really helped and brought out the best in him, and he's gonna have career highs and all sorts of numbers by the time this season is done.
What are you seeing from the defensive side of things? You know, there are a couple of mishaps against the Wild, but generally speaking, Colton Parayko's been a better player. It looks like he may have his partner. It looks like the pieces may be falling together in a somewhat sensible fashion. JT, do you get the sense that some order has been restored on the blue line now? It's been a bit of a rough go, and we've talked a lot about Marco Scandella being in the middle of that roughness. But what's your take on where the D line is?
Well, with Scandella on the third line, that kind of, you know, limits his exposure. He's not playing, against the top lines. He's still a pretty effective penalty killer, and that PK unit has really come alive the last 7-8 games. We've talked about Mikkola before. If you need a top four defenseman, he's kind of auditioning for that. If you think he is a top four defenseman, and you're Doug Armstrong, maybe you don't make a move. And boy, Mikkola has really been an eye opener. As you say, Parayko has he had a bumpy play or two up against the Jets, but he looks like he snapped out of his funk. I guess just kind of as the defense turned, though, there's always something. And now the question is Perunovic. What's going on with Scott Perunovic? Okay, he's sick, non-COVID illness. He misses a game. The team plays very well without him, and wins. Like most coaches, Berube doesn't change the lineup the next game. So Perunovic is a healthy scratch. Then he comes back in an 11-7 format against Winnipeg and plays only 8:38, his lowest total since coming up. He makes a bad defensive decision that leads to a goal. I'm talking of the goal. I think it might have been was it Shifley or no? It might have been the Nikolai Ehlers goal. Perunovic goes behind the net, and Parayko already had the guy, so he goes behind the net to get the passer and leaves the space open. And I think Berube's been slow to critique Perunovic, but I think more and more he's saying, "Hey, he's got to get better on the defense." So that's kind of the biggest question on the defense is what do you do with Scotty there?
Yeah, Perunovic's 5-on-5 offense has been a bit lacking. He's been fine on the power play, that's worked out well, but I think 5-on-5, he really hasn't contributed as much as they'd like to see there. And obviously the defense is going to be what defines him. Defensively, the Blues, you look at the charts and the heat maps, there's still a lot of shots, not necessarily right in front of the net, but in the slot. There's still a lot of space that they're giving up there is prime scoring position for opponents. So that's something to look at going forward.
Yeah, I had the Wild on the mind thinking of the Jets game, and I'll talk about the Wild in a minute. But Mark Scheifele, speaking of being right in front of the net, should have had like 6 goals in that game, JT. He's still shaking his head. That could have really been ugly. You talk about opportunities that were hopping over sticks or being whiffed on right around the goal. I'm sure the Chief found plenty of stuff in that particular game to bring up with the group.
Yeah, it's weird. It's almost like they reverted to their Chuck Lindgren, Ville Husso style, where they make just enough dumb plays and mistakes to give the other team a lot of possibilities. We didn't see that for 4, 5, 6, 7 games with Husso and Lindgren, and it raises the age-old question. Oh, they play harder for Lindgren or Husso, or they relax more when Binnington's in there. And I mean, it's just kind of a one-game sample size, but that looked a lot like the Blues to me that were playing before that. I think it was a 7-win, 1-loss, 3-tie stretch that they had. That kind of looked like those Blues, and those Blues were a frustrating team to watch.
Yeah, I had to think there was ever a game this season that you're going to be distracted. It had to be that first game in Winnipeg. I mean, for guys were going up there, and you got to be thinking, if I test positive here, I'm here till the end of time in Canada. I'm not playing in the Winter Classic. I'm not, coming home with the family for Christmas. Not a good situation. So if there's ever a time you're going to be, I think, distracted, that game was going to be one of them.
And why, if you're Canada, though, would you schedule any cross-border games around the holidays, if you're the NHL, knowing that might happen? I think the NHL and Bill Daly, when I communicated with him for that COVID story, wrote, he kind of admitted they underestimated maybe or didn't anticipate as much problems with COVID. But why would you even flirt with that, knowing what the border conditions? Just don't schedule any cross-border games at that time, or as few as you can.
Well, some of the stories about guys trying to find their way back home after getting caught in quarantine situations, whether it's in the NHL or the AHL, because of the Canadian complication, were pretty astounding. Some of the things that people had to go through, just to, you know, it's insane. And, but, you know, this is the world we're in. And then speaking of, again, the big showcase game, the Winter Classic and the Wild, you know, they're a team, and I'm trying to look at the, took a look at the Western Conference at the pause, and maybe the team that strikes me as the biggest surprise, but also the team that could take the hardest fall in the last 50-ish games is the Minnesota Wild. They certainly didn't go into the pause playing very well. I can't figure out how that team does it. And Joel Eriksson, that gets racked up pretty good in that last game. And they don't really have a number one center. They got a superstar on the wing. They've got a pretty solid D. They're getting pretty good goaltending from Talbot. But when I'm looking at the division, I see, okay, Colorado's just outstanding. Having dealt with a bunch of injuries, they're just really just keep going. After that, you know, Nashville's been a pleasant surprise. The Blues have kind of pushed themselves back into the mix. The Wild, to me, I'm scratching my head thinking, how are they going to keep this thing going? And, of course, it's going to be a big focal point if they get to play that game, that team. But, JT, how has Dean Evason and Bill Guerin put this team on the ice to play the way it has?
Yeah, you know, I thought the same thing last year, too. Remember, they had a fantastic record last year. It's like, how are these guys doing? Okay, Kaprizov, what a talent. They've got some big guys, Greenway and those guys that can, you know, I remember one of the games in Minnesota last year, that line, they just pounded the Blues. The Blues ended up winning that game, but excuse me, not COVID, just a cough, guys. They pounded them, but still, how are they doing it? And I don't know what, maybe we see them coming back to earth a little bit. The Blues certainly, last year, when the Blues were like 5-1-2 against the Blues, certainly had no problem with them, but I don't see them having staying power. But then again, guys, I thought that last year, and then they were, you know, pretty high up in the standings at the end.
Yeah, certainly the COVID outages are one thing, but that's 10 days. They've got injuries that are going to carry on possibly a little longer. You know, power play not been good for that team this year, and that's been a problem. They're not generating a lot off of that, and that's a big opportunity for them.
Now look around, I see teams I scratch my head at. You guys got a good look at the Dallas Stars, and to me, that's one of the many teams in the Western Conference that's sort of caught in between. You know, they're caught in between having some guys that they've had for a while that are making a lot of money, having some good young players who certainly they can build around. In the case of the Dallas Stars, you know, Rupe Hintz is going to be a heck of a player, is a heck of a player. Robertson's a heck of a player. They've got some, you know, Heiskanen, hell of a player. But they've also got stuck with some guys, and, you know, Ben and Sagan. And so I look at like Dallas, and then I look over in the West. I see San Jose caught in between. I see the Kings caught in between, some good young players and some high paid veterans. I see Chicago still caught in between. So I look at the Western Conference, and then I'll go to Nashville. They're hanging in there now, but man, they're paying Duchesne and Johansson a lot of money. And I don't mind where the Blues are. I still think this is a Vegas, Colorado conference. But beyond that, man, it's there are some teams that have just kind of fallen to a muddled place right now.
That's just a terrible place to be, too, that caught in between land. And Dallas certainly is there. You know, Sagan and Ben just aren't what they used to be. The defense is still very, very good. Their blue line core is really high end, but they're just not going to score many goals when you play those guys. It still is nothing's changed. It's still a Colorado and Vegas conference. I got to tell you though, as we sit here now compared to the West, the East just looks stacked at the top with Carolina and Florida coming on and Tampa Bay showing no signs of, being anything less than a team that could win three in a row. And Toronto, of course, Toronto, we always withhold judgment to the playoffs. I don't know. Do any in the West, do any of you guys have any faith in like that? This is finally the year for Edmonton. I don't know. I have to see it before I believe it.
Yeah. It would be great to see it because it'd be great to see that talent in the playoffs. And in that situation, you'd love to, to see those guys go at it. You know, but who knows how this season plays out, especially with them being a Canadian team. So I want to believe in Edmonton, but yeah, it remains to be seen, but they certainly have the potential there. And another, I talked during one of the intermissions when Dallas was in town, I had a long talk with Ben Bishop, who plans on moving back to St. Louis. Now that his career is over, he's already got a house and is looking on coming back to St. Louis.
Oh, that's good. We all know where he'll hang out. He's going to have a favorite restaurant, but great to have the grandkids back in town and such for the family. So that's, and you know, what a great story of perseverance to get to the level that he got to, and then the perseverance to keep trying. God bless him. Haven't been too many guys that have persisted more than Ben Bishop to make it and to try to keep going through some really tough injuries. And you're looking elsewhere in the conference, like, here's the thing about, I'm going to get a little rant here, okay? Here's the thing about Edmonton. Ken Holland's a moron. The general manager, I mean, the guy's an idiot. He left a gigantic mess in Detroit of just horrible contracts. So he goes to Edmonton, and he has got, you know, he's got, I mean, it's just a mess. He's not good in goal. And Mike Smith's 106 years old and is on one leg. Maybe he plays down the stretch. He needs a goaltender. He's stuck with two goaltenders, one that's hurt and one that's an overpaid backup. His defensive core, you know, it's a mess. I mean, he's got Nurse is a beast. Okay, Darnell Nurse is a beast. But, my God, and he's taken, you know, they've had some bad luck, but still. And there's an offensive depth issue. I mean, it's just he is not that good of a hockey guy. I mean, you know, 15 years ago, they were rocking and rolling with their European scouts. Man, you look at the end of his time in Detroit and the mess he left Yzerman, and you look at his time in Edmonton where he's now squandering Draisaitl and McDavid. I'm sorry. I don't see it. You know, some of these guys, I used to rant about Glenn Sather this way. He rode the whole Messier-Gretzky thing to a long career of mostly high-level incompetence. But anyways, enough of that. I will give a shout-out.
Kind of a calm Gardo rant, though. You gave us advance warning.
I just shook my head. I mean, they had a tough stretch here. They're not that good. And you look I'm not sure about Calgary, but Daryl Sutter's a good coach.
And so maybe
there's buy-in.
Maybe the Blues could trade like Charlie Lindgren for Nurse. Or I kid. I joke. That would be nice. You know, I would show up at these NFL meetings once or twice a year and see the team owners, and I would say to myself, how in the heck did these guys get rich? And I think, Gardo, you're wondering, how in the heck did he become a general manager in the NHL?
Well, look, you know, and Tom, he had great success. There's no, I mean, look, Detroit had a heck of a run, and I'll give a ton of credit to the whole operation. And so he gets credit for that, for having a great operation. But, you know, once they lost their edge in European scouting, and this guy, there wasn't, if he had one guy, hey, let's make Darren Helm rich. Hey, let's make Justin Ablicator rich. Why? And let's give them 100 years on their contract, too. Oh, anyways, I digress. Tom, I want to give a shout out to a positive note. Bruce Boudreau, one of the good guys in hockey, goes to Vancouver, and now he's patting Pettersson on the back. He's giving a gentle nudge to Brock Besser, and they're winning hockey games.
You know, it's the kind of thing you would expect if they had like made large scale talent changes, but they just changed the coach. They brought in Boudreau, and instantly the team becomes successful, and that's been kind of a hallmark for him throughout. So, yeah, you know, when the Blues lost to Vancouver in the playoffs that year, it was like, gee, you know, what can Vancouver do? And then they didn't. But now they are, and now you can move in that division. So, it's good to see. And Bruce is a good guy and genial and good to be around.
You know, and GM Jim Benning made some good moves by dumping some just god awful contracts that were his fault on Arizona, which is a whole other story, just a sad, sad story. And had he made a coaching change sooner, maybe this team could end up being a pretty good team and without making those changes. And meanwhile, Jim Rutherford's looking for a GM and Jim Benning is out of work. So to sum up the Western Conference, the way I see it, guys, love Anaheim. Zegras and Jamie Drysdale, Trevor Zegras, Jamie Drysdale, good building blocks. They're on their way. They've got enough. They've reached some critical mass of young talent. They've still got some cleanup to do on their roster, which they'll do. Vancouver's got a chance. Calgary's got a chance. Vegas is very good. No faith in Edmonton. San Jose caught in between. LA caught in between. And in this division, again, going back, obviously Colorado's outstanding. Still trying to figure out all the rest of the teams. I mean, Winnipeg has to change coaches. That's a talented team. They look like it against the Blues. But, I mean, I look at the whole division. I'm just like, I mean, JT, do you have any forecasts for how this particular division shakes out over the last 50?
What's that, the Pacific or the Central?
The Central. Now, how does the Central? Yeah. I think we have a pretty good idea of where the Pacific is going. But, you know, I'm still waiting for Nashville to stumble and for Minnesota to stumble and for Winnipeg to play better, frankly.
Yeah, not that the Central's terrible, but, you know, like we said earlier, I don't think Minnesota's as good as their record. I felt that for a while. They're starting to come back to the pack. It's not going to happen for Dallas this year. I don't understand Nashville yet and why they're playing so well. But I don't really see any reason why the Blues shouldn't end up in the in the top three in the division.
Yeah, you know, I'm just looking at some projections landing. You know, Nashville, Colorado, Minnesota look to be kind of safe, but the Blues and Winnipeg could be battling there, and you know that fourth spot. It's really going to be tight. It's what we said going into the season. It's going to be injuries and things like that separate who win, because there's not a whole lot separating the Central Division.
Yeah, you know, and I've given up on Ryan Johansson in Nashville that way, but. And they've got to decide what to do with Philip Forsberg, probably just give him the money. David Poile got kind of caught between, you know, got in between again, sort of a competitive retooling instead of a rebuild, because he had two contracts he couldn't get rid of. Not even Arizona would touch those contracts, I don't think so. Interesting. Now, all right, last chance before the holidays, guys. I've yelled and screamed some. JT, anything irritating you before to get off your chest before the happy holiday?
I just hate that you have to get tested entering and leaving Canada. It's a big pain in the ass. Luckily, there's a testing place like two blocks from the hotel in Winnipeg. So that made it easier to scramble to get out of town. But I don't know. I'm just happy to be alive. Happy to be. Covering hockey and covering a good team. Again, you got to realize where I came from some terrible, terrible Rams teams for the last decade. Nice to be covering a team that pretty much has a clue about how to go about their business. It's a shame that there are no Olympics. I was looking forward to that. I don't know what Tom and I will be doing in February, but it looks like we may have some postponed games to maybe cover in February, but life is good. Happy holidays to everyone. Merry Christmas.
Yes. Yeah. I think back fondly of simpler times when things were so much easier on the hockey beat, when you could talk to people and have conversations and walk around the dressing room and just interact. And because we're looking at another season of nothing but Zoom calls here, which is just not going to be fun. Not fun for us. The players, you know, probably aren't big fans, but they probably are easier to deal with it than we are. Like, oh, they're not hanging around. But yeah, I normalcy. Let's hope for a more normal 2022.
Hey Tom, who was your guy, the really smart Russian defenseman that you would you connected
Alexander
with
Havanoff?
Havanoff, yeah.
Sasha, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. See, I mean, you guys, how much wisdom you gained from all your interactions with him, and now we're just like, yeah.
I was just thinking about Steve Martins the other day. He was a Harvard grad and playing with the Blues in some of their less successful times. But Steve was a great guy. There's all sorts of just great guys along the way that you run into that are fun to hang out with.
Carter Hutton.
Yeah.
Carter Hutton.
Yeah, yeah.
All the times you're just hanging around with Carter Hutton. But oh, well.
Miserable season for Carter Hutton.
But still, hey, heck of a guy to talk to, and yes, he'll have an interesting life after hockey. So there you go.
Yes, he will.
All right, guys. Well, thanks so much for making time so close to the holiday. This has been our pandemic pause edition of the NetFront Presence. A reminder that all of our podcasts can be found on our website and at stltoday.com/podcast. For Jim, for Tom, for the rest of the crew at the Post-Dispatch, have a great holiday, folks. I'll try to show up in a better mood next week if we have hockey. Until then, see ya.